Mr. McIndoe, reel 3.
Now, you had quite a long training before you went over to France. It was some 10 months. Did you feel that such a long period seemed to be necessary?
Well, it was adequate.
I wondered if the long wait had any effect on the morale of the men.
No. It had no... because it was essential for fitness. It was essential for fitness. We had... Yes, we were always... We're always engaged. There was never a period of idleness.
Any grumbles? You know, war will be over
plenty.
Before we get out there?
Plenty. It was known as a soldier's privilege. Do it and grumble afterwards.
Now, after your training finished at Colchester, you had a series of manoeuvres after you left Colchester. Exactly where did you go and what did you do?
Well, we... Move when we left Colchester, we never knew, of course, where we were going or if we were returning. And we marched. We marched to Woodford. I think it was Woodford or Woodbridge, and Suffolk. Mm-hmm. Which I think was about 24 miles. we stayed under bivouacs and barns in farmhouses, and we started a manoeuvre there with the rest of the division. The division were marked with a white badge or a mark of identification as they were resembling the enemy. I think it was on the back of their hat or the back of their tunic. And we moved then right across country, and eventually mobilized again, and we marched to Bishop Stortford in Hertfordshire. From Bishop Stortford, then you corrected me. We took the train to Warminster or Codford. We subsequently took camp at Codford in huts that had been newly built and equipped with beds, and they're very comfortable.
Did the training that carried on at Codford, was it the same as you'd had at Colchester?
Yes, we carried on the same type of training there, only the country was more hilly and it asked for more of an effort. The country around Codford, Larkhill, Bulford, and Chittern was very hilly, and it did require quite an effort.
And before you went to France, you had an unusual kind of inspection. Describe that for me.
Yeah, we were told to we were being inspected by King George. Clean up, take all your cleaning gear with you in your pack, and every man was thoroughly inspected. The everything had to shine, even the tips on your boots. And we set off from Codford to Stonehenge, where King George was on his horse there, and on a dais he took the salute. Prior to this, we piled arms near the dais before the inspection, and cleaned our buttons and all our equipment, and prior to the inspection. When the inspection was over, we returned again on foot to the camp at Codford. Mm. Having completed 30-odd miles in the day.
Mm. When you went across to France, where did you embark from?
We took the train from Southampton to Southampton. We got the we embarked on the paddle steamer, the La Marguerite, which had been in service for many years, and the old regiment, and the rest of transport and everything else went with it.
Now, was the La Marguerite organised within a convoy for the crossing?
Yes, together with two or three other boats, yes. Mm.
Describe that scene for me.
Yes.
And the trip across.
Well, the dock, of course, the quayside was confusion all the time. Thousands of troops, it seemed, mingling about, going nowhere, but there was some objective, of course, but all the different units in the brigade were there and being transported to their respective ships for the crossing.
So what did your convoy consist of, do you remember?
I can't remember that.
Okay.
But during the crossing I was on the top deck and laying on the deck, as everybody, you still had your equipment harness on, so to take that weight off, you use the back valise as a pillar, as it were. And but I did see destroyers in the distance, going across the channel.
Mm. Mm. Now, before you went over to France, you were telling me before that there was a memo issued about VD. Tell me about that again.
When we arrived in France, a memo was issued by Lord Kitchener. And on this memo said that in recent months, quite a number of the expeditionary force had rendered themselves unfit for duty through negligence in contracting venereal disease. This must stop forthwith, as the War Office take very poor view of this in view of the number that's been rendered
unfit for duty.
Unfit for duty.
When you actually got to Le Havre, you were telling me that you saw
yes,
some of
yes, when we got to this number one rest camp on the hill at Le Havre, we went out, I, together with another colleague, went out and saw a number, all different units, engaged in digging pits and sweating profusely. And in conversation to one of the inmates, I subsequently found out that they were undergoing a course of treatment, which apparently was a German treatment named 606, which necessitated an injection of mercury into the system, and this mercury apparently took effect quicker if the victim would overheat or did overheat his body in working. And so rid himself of this complaint. But in future, the memo said that the victim's parents or his wife or his relatives of his family would be notified in the future if any man rendered himself unfit through this particular cause.
Mm-hmm. I see. Good. Now, after you left Le Havre and moved up towards the front, could you describe your journey up to the front for me?
Well, within the next day, we we left the Le Havre camp. We walked to a railway siding, and there we boarded trucks. They were not compartment coaches, they were open trucks to go somewhere.
And what was the journey like?
Very, very slow. There was quite a lot of congestion on the rail, passing different junctions with shunting and finding a way through. But we passed quite a number of other vehicles and trains carrying war material somewhere, either guns, limbers, or tree trunks, or necessities of war.
What was it like being inside this coach for quite a long time?
But we were huddled together. We didn't have a lot of room. We made progress, but very, very slow. Very, very slow. And we subsequently arrived at Amiens.
Do you have any memories of Amiens?
Amiens, yes, I can remember, was shored up, the outside, with sandbags.
Sorry, what was shored up?
Shored up, the cathedral. The cathedral was shored up with sandbags, I should say, 30 feet high, at about 4 to 6 bags deep. They were. The walls was given adequate protection, I would imagine. I would imagine from the floor, from the ground level.
Why was it shored up?
Against protection from bombs or gunfire or anything that may be, anything that could render it...
Why were they concerned to protect the cathedral?
Well, on account of its age and its...
Was it being used for a military purpose?
Well, we were told that it was a distributing centre for the meat. It was necessary to keep the meat in a secure and safe place somewhere, and that we understand that the basement of it was used to keep the meat in it for distribution later.
I see. Now, after Amiens, you started marching, and this must have been quite an interesting experience because you would begin to see the start of the military systems and trench systems.
Yes.
What I'd like you to do now is describe for me how the scene changed as you gradually got nearer and nearer to the front line.
Yes. Well, we were received very well by the occupants of that had been left behind in the village of Corby and Meholt. And
how do you mean you were received well? In what way?
Well, by the occupants there was waving flags and shouting, and we received very, very well. And